Oh, good day, team. Welcome to the U Project. It's Harps. It's me. It's Tiff. It's Marcus. It's 4:30-ish on a Saturday afternoon as we record this. And young Tiff and I were just discussing before you should see the bloke we're looking at. He looks like he's about to do a burg at 11 o'clock at night in the back streets at who the fuck knows where. But we were just talking about how 4:30 on a Saturday afternoon might not be our ideal cognitive performance time. Were you falling asleep?
I went and had a little power nap, and I reckon if I had the time to doze off, I would have been hard at it for a good couple of hours.
When do you reckon, Mark Lebusque, welcome to you, my friend.
Thanks for having me. And just, I don't know if we have to edit this bit out, but one of my good colleagues recently told me I'm looking more like Ivan Milat every day.
You do look a little bit like, now I'm hoping that's just in support of Movember. That's not actually something you're considering to adopt for a long time.
Movember are a client of mine, and they've issued me the challenge this year, and no, it's coming off, mate. I got Tuesday's the last day, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, you do have a little bit of Ivan Milat about you, but thankfully I'm hoping the only resemblance is the Mo. Tiff, what's your best time of day for cognitive performance? Like, when does your brain focus, mind, attention, productivity? What's your optimal time?
I'm pretty good in the mornings, but I feel like cognitively I get really good focus after dinner, which is weird and annoying. Because I have to harness that. That's when I can focus really well, get some good solid work done, but it does make me want to keep going. And then if I don't switch off, I find it hard to go to sleep.
Now, do you reckon that's your personality? Do you reckon that's your genetics? Is it just because at night time the world's a bit quieter? What do you think that is?
Do you know what I reckon it could be?
What?
I'll finish my dinner by then, so I've stopped thinking about the next feed. For the rest of my day, I'm always thinking about what am I going to eat next.
How many meals a day do you eat?
I'd eat 100 if I could. I normally only have brekkie, lunch and dinner, and 3 or 4 blocks of lint in between.
Yeah. How are you not 142 kilos?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Mark Lebusque, how many meals a day for you, my friend? Just your bog standard 3?
Yeah, if we don't count salted caramel connoisseurs, yes.
Oh, well, that's delicious.
Yes. I don't even know what they are. What are
you need to get out a bit more, Harps. They're ice creams, mate. They are delicious. They are absolutely
really
delicious. Yeah, no, 3 meals a day. Usually start with a – depends on what phase I'm in. Usually starts with a smoothie after a workout and then – I don't know, whatever comes up, mate. But 3, the standard, it's really funny, you know, because I wonder why it has to be 3.
No, it doesn't have to be at all, does it? It's just a kind of a cultural norm and something we just, you know, if we grew up and mum and dad always had breakfast, mid-morning, lunch, mid-afternoon and dinner, and they're all about the same size and they're all smaller, that's what we would do because what we have been programmed to do. But it's interesting how, when you age, how things change a bit, you know, and I don't need as much food as I used to need. I don't train as hard as I still train hard, but I train differently.
Yep.
It's interesting how old are you, mate? 50-ish?
54.
Okay, so we'll go with 50-ish. What are you, Tiff?
38.
38.
Spring chicken.
Do you have to train? Have you noticed that you have to train differently because you're older, or are you still as good as when you were 28? Oh,
no, to be honest, actually, lately I have found that I'm a bit less of a beast.
Mm.
A bit less of a beast.
Is that because you're eating 20 pounds of chocolate a week?
Maybe.
What's your go-to lint? What's the one you go
dark
to?
Dark with sea salt.
Okay.
Dark with sea salt.
Understood. There are so many dark with different orange, raspberry. Mm. There's so many, isn't there?
Mm. And there's a caramel with dark salted caramel and sea salt. Yeah.
Hey, I just want to. Can I? I just want to say something here. Before when you were asked the question, Tiff, and then you started with "to be honest." I wonder, why do people say "to be honest" before they say something, do you reckon?
Probably because we're always fibbing.
Oh, God.
Let's not have the fibbing conversation again. I've got a bit of blowback from people.
Oh, really?
Ah, people who go, "No, I never lie." That's a lie in itself. I go, "Do you have kids?" "Well, yeah." "So what?" I go, "Did you tell them that Santa's a thing?" "Oh, well, that's what." I go, "Well, is Santa real?" And to all the people who are under 12 listening, go away now. I'm interested in the psychology of a lot of things, but we were going to talk, amongst other things, Mark Labuske, about the psychology of something today.
Yes.
What is it?
The psychology of Christmas.
And I said to you this morning when we had a quick encounter, I said, I want to have a chat about that because I've had people coming up to me recently going, "Oh, God, Christmas is coming. I fucking hate Christmas Day and I dread." And I'm like, that's such an interesting thing. And no judgment, just curiosity, just interest. And you said to me, "Funny you say that. I fucking hate Christmas Day," or something similar.
So very, very close.
What's your deal with Christmas?
First thing I want to say is, hasn't it crept up like a sneaky bastard this year because of lockdown and that? I reckon you go out now and you go, "Fuck, all the Christmas decorations are up." Yep, because it's December almost, dickhead. So what is it for me? Oh, look, Jesus, I'm going to just lay back on my leather couch now and hang on to my teddy bear.
That's all right. Let me just get my pen poised and my spiral notepad ready. I'm ready. Let's unpack it, Mark. Why is Christmas problematic for you?
I reckon because this is what I remember about Christmas. And I say in a loving family and a loving extended family, but it tended to be, particularly for parts of our family, that Christmas is one of the only times we got together every year.
Mm.
And that was because it followed this sort of chronology. Let me just fill in some gaps here for you. We'd wake up early at 20 Elizabeth Street in Mildura, and we'd usually host Christmas at Bob and Norma Labuske's with Tony, Jason and Mark, and do our presents and things like that. And the old man would be doing the cooking because the old woman couldn't cook, like seriously couldn't cook. She can't say anything now because she's passed on, but she would agree if she was here that she couldn't cook. And then the relatives would come around, and by about 11, they'd be there. By about midday, they'd had a few. By about 2 o'clock when we would eat, they'd had more. And then the arguments would start.
Mm.
And I remember every Christmas literally finishing with an argument, maybe around about 4 o'clock.
Mm.
And as a kid, it'd be like, fucking hell.
Mm.
Here we go again. And even today, like even my kids will say to me, "You don't enjoy Christmas much, do you?" And I go, "Well, not really," because, and even talking about it now, it just brings, not like they were punching on, but you just knew that the day was going to end badly. And that's imprinted something into my psyche of, this isn't my fucking favorite day of the year.
Mm.
So that's what, it's nothing to do with, "God, I've got to buy presents." And Jesus, there's fucking crowds everywhere. It's more like on that day, things tended to go pear-shaped.
I think a lot of people have traumatic memories, you know, and some it's like you, it's just not that pleasant. I mean, it wasn't like it was horrendous, but it wasn't pleasant, and it was probably not pleasant most years, which is why you still kind of have that relationship and that association. It's interesting, though, to how we even like, what are we now? It's the 27th of November, so we're a month away, less 2 days. And even now, and this is not at all a criticism, you're like, that day. Like you're already anticipating a bad day when we could go, well, it's a Tuesday or it's a whatever it is. I don't know what day it is. But it's funny how we have a story about it, then we believe the story. And even though those days in Mildura at 11 Elizabeth Street?
Number 20, mate. 11 20. Was, we didn't like the people at 11.
Of course not. 20 no. Elizabeth Street. Those days are gone. You're not there anymore. You're now a dad. You're now got kids. You're now the captain of the ship. But it still comes with us. I wonder if that's ever going to change. Do you ever think, well, that's not happening anymore. I'm not there anymore. That's not life now. I'm just going to make the day great for my kids. It's not about me. It's not about my history. Like, yeah. I don't need to go into it with this thinking. Easier said than done, I know. I'm just wondering.
It's interesting, you know, I recorded a little solo podcast this morning talking about what I call the uninvited guests, which is the bad news stories that come out of our bad news filing cabinet in our head. And that fucking thing turns up every year as an uninvited guest. Mm. Now, here's how I deal with it. Like, here's Christmas for us this year. It'll be our family, our immediate family. So the three kids, Amy, Sam, and Zoe, and some partners, and me and Alison, and Alison's dad, and that's it. Now, that's not planned that way so that we don't end up verbally punching on with other parts of the family at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But I will struggle again. I know that the story will turn up. Even if I'm having a good time, I reckon the story still comes and knocks on the door and goes, let me in. It's like, fuck off. You're not invited, but it still comes. So I think there's a level of, haven't thought about it much really until today when you called me and said, you want to do a podcast this afternoon? And now you've triggered me into it many, many days earlier than usual. So you know what? It's your fault, Craig Harper.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course. Of course your attitude and thinking and self-created fucking anxiety is my fault. Of course it is. Tiff, what about you?
I always think it's funny. I had this conversation with someone recently. I always go home for Christmas. And I remember there's been times, and I never make a big deal of it. I'm like, Christmas, just another day. It's annoying. It's expensive to go back to Tassie. It gives me the shits. I'm never ready. I'm always overworking and I never want to go. And I remember one year I didn't go because I didn't care. And I was like, I'll go after Christmas and I'll have a holiday after Christmas, a few days after. I was so sad on Christmas Day. And I was like, isn't it funny how sad and lonely I got just because I knew the whole world was with their family and smothered in love and I was alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how we do that, and I've had a few Christmas days alone as well for just through circumstances, and I have to be careful that I don't go down that road because it's an easy road to go down. I wonder if we can reframe it so we go, well, like, but what's great? Well, what's great is I'm with my family. What's great is I'm healthy. What's great is we actually get to do this. What's great is for now, hopefully, we're not in lockdown. What's, you know, I think it's understandable, but it's like in a very, very practical sense of this, you know, giant blue spinning ball hurtling through space and time and infinity, it's just another day on the calendar. It's just another day of the week, and it's not the day of the week, and it's not even the occasion. It's not Christmas Day 2021 that's the problem. It's the, as you said, Mark, it's the bullshit that lives in your head as a result of previous days like this one. But none of those, and this is the thing, that none of those days exist now.
That's it.
Like, those days don't exist. They only exist in your thoughts. They're done. And you know, I think this is one of the challenges for us, is to go, well, am I going to be bigger than that? Am I kind of going to concede that, yeah, it's fucking Christmas, I don't do Christmas, I don't love Christmas, and it's going to be shit? And we create this self-fulfilling prophecy by going into this day, and we know it's bad because they're all bad and blah, blah, you know. And I go, well, I don't know. Like, I think for me, I go, Ron and Mary, Christmas Day. I don't know how many Christmas days I'm going to have with Ron and Mary, so fuck, I'm excited about this one.
Yep.
I don't really, in a practical sense, I don't love it because I don't eat most of the, firstly, I don't eat lunch. I only eat breakfast and dinner, so that's a problem. And it's Christmas lunch, and it's not like it's fucking two drumsticks and a carrot. It's like fucking, it's food for 97 people.
Take a doggy bag for me, Harp.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but see, with that, Harp, so, because you said Mary, like Mary loves you so much. I've just had a thought when you were saying, I only have breakfast. She's up at like 1:30 a.m. preparing the turkey and all those things so you can have it for breakfast.
Mm. Well, as she should be. As she should be. That's what fucking Mary, that's Mary's job.
So what about this then? What about for those who, and look, this wasn't ever an issue for me around that bad Christmas time. What about for people who don't like Christmas because there are people that are no longer there?
Yeah.
They don't look forward to it. That also comes into play here as well.
Yeah. By the way, I'm kidding about that's Mary's job, everyone, so don't send me a letter. Yeah, look, it's totally understandable. And I'm not criticizing anyone at all. I think if Christmas days are bad and sad for you because someone's not here, I get it. I get it. But if somebody is no longer with you, they're not with you any days. they're not with you the day before or the day after Christmas either.
It's interesting how it gets magnified, though, I think, on those days.
Well, I think because wanted or not, you know, Christmas Day is an emotional day, good or bad. It seems like there's two distinct groups and a small group. The distinct group is, I love Christmas, I can't wait for Christmas Day. And the other distinct group is, I hate Christmas. And then there's a small kind of crowd in the middle who are like, yeah, whatever. You know, but it seems to be quite a divisive day in that sense, in terms of people really excited about it or not. I love seeing, you know, when I go up to the thriving metropolis of Latrobe Valley, I love seeing 1,000 kids out on bikes and skateboards and, you know, all that kind of shit. You know, that makes me happy.
This is going to sound even worse than not liking Christmas Day, but if we roll back 24 hours before, one of my least favourite TV shows for the year is Carols by Candlelight.
God,
when they show
those, are you the Christmas Grinch, dude?
I may well be, but this is gonna make everyone think you're an absolute fuck. when they show those babies sleeping in the arms of their parents and all those photos, I'm like, take your fucking babies home and put them into bed. It's way past their bedtime. You parents, you bad parents.
I'm pretty sure you can't say fucking babies. I'm pretty sure that's not okay.
Get rid of that. Just get
not
rid of
at
that.
Christmas,
please.
You can.
Jeez, talk.
I don't
about
know what it is, but I just have a real thing.
Can
with
I
that
just
show.
Say that to this point in time, this is a fucking Debbie Downer. This episode.
Let's lift it up.
Could you two fucking lift your game? Because fucking hell, I'm ready to pull the pin.
Do you know what I think, sir? I think that it's a. Or for me, I see it these days as a real opportunity to learn, like, what's underneath me having a feeling about Christmas and how can I unpack that. Like, it's not about just reframing it for me. It's like, oh, that happens. Didn't know where that – like, what is that all about?
Mm.
What's underneath it?
It actually is, again, that's a metacognitive process where, and all silliness aside, like Mark feels what he feels, and of course that's cool, but we all go, oh, it is interesting to go, this is how I feel, where does it come from?
Mm.
And that's one good metacognitive question, thinking about thinking. Another good question is, can I reframe it? Another good question is, do I have to think like this about Christmas? Is this optional, right?
Yeah.
How am I reinforcing this negativity? What am I saying? What are my stories? What's my self-talk? What's my inner dialogue that's making this more traumatic and dramatic? And am I creating the trauma, or is it really about Christmas, or is it about my thinking about Christmas? And if it's about my thinking about Christmas, then I'm literally creating the problem, right? Because it ain't about Christmas. Of course, we all have emotional and psychological and neuro associations with memories.
Yeah.
It's about the memory that we have of another day that we called Christmas. And this is part of the challenge. And this is, again, when we talk about the metacognitive kind of journey, is where we start to think about how I think and why I think the way I think. And does this thinking around Christmas, or does this thinking around being in a committed relationship, or does this thinking around whatever food, or does this serve me or sabotage me? Do I want to change it, or do I just want to go, oh, well, that's just how it is. I fucking hate Christmas. Christmas is a fuck. You know, Did I sound like Mark then?
Well, you know, it's from what you've just said then, it's not the day, it's the activities and actions that happened on that day that have created that story for me. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Right. And you're not, mate, you're not weak or bad. Everyone, it's just, it is what we do. And I have similar shit that I have to deal with. I've been commitment phobic for fucking 50 years. Let's not even open that door. What's that about? Wow. Get comfy, everyone, and fucking get a pen and paper. This could be till June. Tip picks up a pen and paper. Hey, I wanted to read something that I wrote today, which is not an exciting sounding concept, but I thought it took me an hour to write, and I think I'd rather just read this in 2 or 3 minutes and then unpack it with you guys. And it's about a thing that you and I have discussed, Mark, which is a work-life balance, or the idea of work-life balance. Did you read it, Tiff? Did you see it?
I had a bit of a glance over it, but I got a bit tired to Savo when I was scrolling.
No worries.
That's when I went for my nap.
Well, you don't need to read it because I'm going to read it to you. So I apologise, everyone, but I think you may find this interesting, and you may find the...
Hey, Harps, just hang on a minute. You said it was a 2 to 3 minute read, and Tiff said she started reading it and got a bit tired. At what point in the 3 minutes did you get a bit tired,
Tiff? It only takes me 4 sentences to get cognitively fatigued.
Okay, it's called Is Work-Life Balance a Flawed Idea? When work-life balance, we'll call this WLB for this conversation, when work-life balance is discussed, it's often referring to some kind of formula or equation around work hours and non-work hours, with the non-work hours being the life hours in the WLB model. Interestingly, this separation of work and life only exists in theoretical constructs such as WLB, work-life balance. In reality, like it or not, they are intertwined. When I was younger, I attended a workshop where an expert used a graphic like the one I used in my post, which was of a set of scales with work on one side and life on the other, to demonstrate that at its core, work-life balance is about balancing, ergo the image of the scales, the right amount of work with the right amount of life hours. And when we find a way to do that, we nail work-life balance, and naturally happiness, calm, fulfillment, and improved mental health will ensue. The way he explained it, it was essentially a numerical problem to be solved, which all made sense until the curious ex-fat kid in row 4 asked, but what about working 50 hours of a job that I love, one that gives me joy, purpose, meaning, growth, and inspiration, versus 20 hours of a job that I hate in a situation, circumstance, environment, role, task, and culture that fills me with anxiety, frustration, resentment, and dread? The question was genuine. I wasn't trying to derail or challenge him. I was in my mid-20s. I was curious, wanting to learn, and genuinely wanted an answer. He danced around the question and quickly moved on because clearly my reasonable question didn't fit into his time-based model or philosophy. By the way, not 2 to 3 minutes this, Craig. These days, when I'm working with any team, company, or individual, I talk about the idea of work impact. Not work-life balance. That is, irrespective of the number of hours you work, it's about how those hours, a few or a lot, impact your physical, mental, and emotional health. For some people, 50 hours of a certain job will be rewarding, fulfilling, and for them, perfect, while 10 hours of another job for the same person could be toxic, exhausting, and damaging to their health. Impact, not number. Work impact. The assumption that there's a universally correct number of hours that we should all work to create optimal personal and professional outcomes is ridiculous and unscientific, but nonetheless, the idea still prevails. There is no best number or best job, but there is a best formula for you and me. According to some people, I've been overworking for years. And in the middle of my flawed operating system, my overwhelming state is one of happiness, fulfillment, excitement, fun, curiosity, and growth. At 58, I'm working and studying full time, and none of it feels like work. And would I recommend my operating system to anyone? No. But does it work for me? Yes. Discover what works for you. Do you have a version of that, mate, when you work with teams and companies?
Yeah, So I talk to people about the bullshittery of the term work-life balance because work's part of your life.
Mm.
And I think when you think about purely from a work perspective, this is why people freak out because they think there's these two magical things going on. So I talk about what I call life design and really thinking about if you get caught up in this conflict between your work and your life, you sort of disappear up your own ass. So if you start to think of it from, I guess, say, an engineering principles of design, which is thinking with the end in sight and thinking about it in a more structured way, that you can start to actually do some things. In fact, mate, just yesterday I was working with a group. I get them to do a real quick and dirty activity, which is 60 seconds, little circle on a page, and there's five things I say. There's family and friends, sleep, work, and that's paid and unpaid work, community, and self-time. In 60 seconds, I tell them, break up that circle into your pizza that looks like your week. Mm. And people just can't do it because they're so fucking caught on the hamster wheel that they don't do it. So my idea is...
Wait, hang on. What do you mean they can't do it? Why?
Well, they sit there and they're like... Oh, fuck, I need an abacus or a calculator to start working all the... Oh, no, they'll start to break the pie up and they'll be like, oh, that's not quite right, no. So they're really confused in being put on the spot to go, like, what actually am I doing with my time now and my life now?
Mm.
And it's almost like they've got to get it perfectly right.
Mm.
And I think that's where they get confused. It's like you really don't know unless you have a good look at
it. Sorry, I love that term life design because I do a similar thing with people when I say, you know, what's more valuable, your life, literally your life or your house? And they're like, well, of course, my life. You go, cool. So if you were building a new house tomorrow and I gave you here's $1 million for the build and here's a block of land and you got the money and you got the land today, when would you start building? And they're like, you've got all the, you know, you've got all the tools, you've got all the resources and you've got the block of land. When would you start building? Would you start building tomorrow? They're like, well, of course I wouldn't start building tomorrow. When would the building of the house start? Oh, I would guess by the time we spoke with architects and designers and interior decorators and landscapers and builders and plumbers and, you know, blah, blah, or maybe 6 to 12 months. And I go, so you would spend 6 to 12 months just designing the house you want to live in, but you won't spend 6 to 12 days designing the life that you do live in because you just get up in Groundhog Day and do what you've always done. Right, we kind of live a life without design. We live a life of incidental and accidental, where we kind of just, like if you said to a lot of people, and again, don't mean to be judgy, but because this was me for a long time, would you like your life to be different? Most people, if they were honest, would say, well, or something about your life to be different, yes. And if you said, okay, be raw and real and brave, what? Well, this and that and that and that. But when you say, okay, what are you doing to change that? Quite often the answer is, well, nothing really.
Yeah.
You know, so we spend a lot of time planning what our best house will look like or whatever. But it's this, I love that notion of designing strategically, practically designing something and then going to work to create that best life, whatever that means for us. Over time, because you know the bottom line is, and I've shared this story. But when I first started my PhD, one of my friends goes, "But when you finish it, you're going to be nearly 60." And I said, "Well, in 4 years, I'm going to be nearly 60 anyway. Yep. Like that, so I'm going to be nearly 60 with a PhD or not. It's like the 4 years, hopefully, are going to come and go, unless I die. Let's hope that's not the case, but." There's going to be 4 years happening anyway. So why don't I do something that I love and is challenging over the 4 years?
And I love it in your article there when you talked about that whole idea of it doesn't feel like work. I'm doing all these things. People are judging me, but this is me. This is Craig Harper. And what about you? What about you, Tiff? How do you talk of this topic of work impact.
First, I want to further to the metaphor you just gave, Harps. It made me laugh because I visualised it in my head, and I'm like, you don't ever see anyone sitting on a block of land with a pile of cash and bricks crying because their dream house isn't built and they're shit. They go and get an architect. But yet in our lives, we sit on our metaphoric block with our pile of bricks and we cry because our mansion's not built.
Yep.
That's so funny.
Look at you being philosophical.
Because I hang out with grown-ups all the time now. Huh?
I love a good metaphor, but you're right. You're right. And the thing is, if we actually want our life or part of our life to be different in a year or two, then, you know, we need to be strategic. We need to make decisions. We need to be aware. We need to acknowledge things. We need to plan. We need to timeline. We need to fully fucking commit. Like, we're not going to accidentally end up in an awesome life, you know?
It's interesting, you know, just I said I'd do that little quick and dirty, what's it look like now? And then after I've shaken the shit out of them, then I'm like, in 12 months' time, I want you to draw the circle again. I want you to be realistic. And you've only got 168 hours, so there ain't new hours. So if you're going to put some more time into one of these things, you're going to have to take it from somewhere else. Draw it again for me. And then I want you to write.
You mean in a week? You said a year.
Yeah. No. So what is it going to look like in a year for you if you want it to change?
What will it look like
in a year? And then I ask him this question. What is the one thing that you fear if you made those changes? And it is usually two things. It will be, if I want more time for myself, particularly for women with this one, I'll be selfish. But the overriding one is, if I take time out of work, I'll let people down and I won't succeed in work. They're the top two that come up. And I extend that with my last team, where I then got them to do a proper two-week audit on those five things by minute, on those five aspects of their life. And they came back and most of them couldn't account for the 24 hours in the day, which told me that there was like idle time that they just didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And then I went to the next step, and this is where my HR department got a little bit snaky with me, is I got them to build a goal for themselves, for their family, and for their community into their performance plan at work. And I put 15% of their at-risk bonus against non-work related goals.
Mm.
And guess what, mate? Best results ever.
Wow. Amazing.
So that's sort of, we've got to get past this idea of get Craig Harper or LeBusque or Tiff in to do a fucking lunch and learn session on work-life balance for an hour, and then everyone just walks out going, fuck, can't do that.
Mark, when I got into boxing, when, like I do with everything, was obsessive with it in the first couple of years, and I worked in sales, so I was on the road, so I'm in a performance-based job, it wasn't hours-based, so I'd go get my work done in good time, and then it was just obsessing over training and boxing and getting to boxing and training and talking about boxing. And I feel like I just had two years of work was parked there and I did the job. But when I looked back after 2 years, I'd become a better human, a better business person, a better employee. I'd become an engaged employee, then, of course, a business owner, and I'd transformed this section of my life.
Yep.
Because now I had a passion and an interest that developed me as a human.
It's interesting again, like Greg, who was in my team, just very quickly, his three goals. His goal for family was to go for a walk on the beach with his wife two nights a week. He got 5% of his bonus for doing that.
Wow.
His self goal was to reduce his golf handicap by 5 strokes. He got 5% of his bonus for doing that. And his community goal was to speak at a local high school once a month on leadership. And Greg hit his targets by 275% in year one,
wow,
427% in year two, and reduced his work hours by 22.5 hours a week over those 2 years because we designed it.
Why do you, I mean, it seems self-evident, but why is that, do you think? Tell us why did he perform so well?
Because he was given permission to design a life that would help him to be feeling like it wasn't laborious work. So first, I think the first thing is that he was given permission.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was, and if I look from a work perspective, he wasn't made to feel guilty anymore.
Mm.
Like, you know, good afternoon, Greg, if you walk in at 9 a.m. or it's all right for some, Greg, it's 4:30 and you're leaving and I'm going to be here till 11.
Mm.
Like, you know, look at me, the fucking hero. So I think it's permission, and it's reducing or eliminating that feeling of guilt that people have.
Yeah. And also, I think I love that. Good on Greg, and good idea by you, mate. That's brilliant. But also just realizing that some people are going to be better, more productive, more proactive, happier, more connected, more passionate working 6 hours than nine. They'll get more shit done because they're like, boom, I'm in at nine, I'm out at three or whatever it is, you know. I think also, as you were both chatting, I was thinking about when I grew up in the late 1850s, like work was very much there was no real conversation when I was young, like in the early 1980s. There was no conversation about loving work.
No.
No, it was not like, oh, you know, it's like where your purpose and your fucking passion collide with work. It's like, nah, you get a job. Work's not meant to be fun. It didn't have to be horrible, but it's not about whether or not you enjoy it. It's about paying bills and being a grown-up and getting a job and ticking the box. And I think it's really only in the last decade, in a big way, that people have totally reframed how work can happen. Yep. And, you know, I think I was a forward thinker in that, for myself anyway, by the time I was in my mid or early 20s, which was in the mid 80s, I went, nah, working for somebody is not my thing. It's I'm not lazy, but it's not my thing. And so I figured out how to hack the system early on by working for myself. But I also recognize and acknowledge that for many people, what I did would have been horrible and wrong and stressful and traumatic for them, because you're very vulnerable when you go and you're 25 and you go and rent a space for 3 years and you have no business acumen and you spend all your money on equipment and you did all the things that I do. But for me, it was overwhelmingly, it was a bit scary, but it was more exciting and stimulating and motivating than it was terrifying, you know. And I think that's part of the work thing and the psychology of work and the work-life balance thing more broadly is going, you know, as we said, and as you said at the start, what impact does it have on me? And it's like, I literally know people who and I've had this conversation many times, and I had one recently with a lady who Friday afternoon, the weight starts to lift off her and she starts to feel happy. And Sunday, just after lunchtime, it starts to all come back on. Because there's just this dread of this job. And the trap is, for her, she earns a shitload and she's really good at her job. She's very good at her job and the company will do virtually anything to keep her. She gets paid a fortune, but it's killing her. Mm-hmm. It's killing her, you know, and this is the thing, and that's, you got to recognize that. It's like, well, you know, what is success? Is what are your KPIs? Are your KPIs all about, well, I'm on 300 grand a year, so that's, I'm winning. And if you are, great. But if you're on 300 grand a year and you're not sleeping and you're anxious and you're stressed and your immune system's fucked because you don't sleep and your body's in a state of disrepair all the time because of the anxiety and that, da, 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 well, probably not that successful at all. And this is where being able to stand back and go, and again, we've had this conversation too many times, but and it's a philosophical and it's an individual one, but what the fuck is success anyway for me? I mean, beyond paying the bills and feeding my family and or whatever, you know, okay, beyond that, above that, meeting my financial needs, cool. We've all got to do that, tickety tick. But beyond that, what is success? And I think it's the beyond that question that is the one that we need to figure out in order to be genuinely, like, if we're calling happiness and fulfillment success, then I think that's where it lives, figuring out what happens above that meeting my financial needs space.
What about you, Tiff, in your sort of foray into your world now? How did that work through for you around?
I was just thinking about it then. I was thinking about when I was working. So I was pushed out into sales in various roles. So I went from this time-based working in an office, managing stuff, to, oh, you're good at sales, go do that. So then it was performance thing. And what I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who was a very high up sales consultant. And I remember expressing to him that I felt really, you know, like I waste a lot of time. I'm not, you know, I feel always feel guilty. I feel like I'm not doing, you know, that was, and probably amidst that boxing time too. So I was like, I was feeling guilty and I was carrying around this heavy unworthiness of I'm just wasting moments of time. And he was like, mate, you're doing a job that 90% of people won't do. You're knocking on doors, you're picking up the phone, you're finding business, you're creating relationships, and most people won't do that. And I remember that really changing me. But when I, before I got into that type of work, I used to, my first jobs were in hospitality. And it was funny because I loved working under pressure and I was good. When things were busy, I could run the, you know, the restaurant or run the shop or run the floor, keep everyone happy, be upbeat, get it done. And the beauty of a job like that that got left behind in the corporate world was when no matter how hard and tough and shit that shift was, when you're through that day is over and the next day is fresh. There's no problems waiting. There's no sales waiting. There's no one to follow up. There's nothing you might have. So there was none of that kind of underlying stress that was building over the time in corporate of, oh, I'm not doing this right, something's going to catch up with me, people are going to realise I'm not fucking very good at anything, I'll have to keep my eye out for the next job soon because my boss will realise I'm not really that good. That wasn't there in hospitality because it was one shift at a time.
And how about with what you're doing today?
Oh, God.
What are the thought processes go through your mind now when you're on your way to conquering the world?
This is funny because I went for a walk this afternoon and I was literally, I love this year. This year's been a massive year of growth for me, but I was literally thinking, I have changed as a person. And I don't, can't even describe how, but I mean, I can't even entertain the idea of going back to working a job in exchange for time anymore. I've let go of the stuff that I don't love to do because I'll never be good at it, doesn't matter how hard I try. So I'm embracing the things I'm really good at and just letting the other stuff go without holding on to the guilt of I'm shit. You know, you know, people like, I look at people like Melissa that works with Craig and she's so amazing at all of like attention to detail and, you know, all of that stuff. And my business partners were like that too. And I'm very different and I'm action oriented and I'm creative and I'm excited, but attention to detail is not great for me. And it's just, I'm learning to let go of that and be like, well, that's okay. It doesn't mean you're a shit person.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're not going to succeed. So that's been, like, I think that's been the biggest thing for me right now. Hucks will probably fire me now because I've just told him all my flaws.
but one of the other good things, and I've said this, in fact, Melissa and I were talking about you yesterday, and this is hand on heart. Was it the yesterday or the day before? What is great about you, and you've got lots of skills, and obviously if we didn't think you're great, you wouldn't be working with us, and you're great, right? But you have tremendous output. So, you know, your stuff on social media, your stuff with your podcast, with the You Project, with the workshops that you're, like your growth, you know, you ring me, we had a conversation, I don't know when, and it was essentially how do I run a workshop online or whatever. And I'm like, well, why don't you do and 4 minutes later, there's fucking ads up for it. You don't know how to do it yet, but there are ads. And you're like, guess what? People are booking in. I'm like, well, you better fucking figure out how to do it. And like, here's the thing, right? Some people fucking vacillate and procrastinate and fuck around and they're perpetual, I'm going to do it soon, people.
Mm.
You do it before you get off the phone and you're doing it. And you do a podcast and you've got graphics up and you've got video vignettes. You've got you've got grabs from shows that you've done. You're writing up inspirational quotes. You're just producing and some of it's, average and some of it's brilliant. Welcome to my life. Some of my shit's average, some of it's good, you know, but that's like you can't get good by waiting to be confident.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you can't get good at what you're not doing. So what you do is you, you know, is all of your stuff amazing? No. But it's generally somewhere between pretty good and real good, and it's getting better because skill and development and growth comes with repetition and work, and you're doing it. Like your interviewing skills are better. You're same with you, Mark, since we first met, which was not that long ago. And you, I mean, you were good anyway, but you're better at this. You're better at this because, you know, you're sitting in here with me who's got a pretty big show and's got lots of experience and not better, not anything, just different. We've been in different places, but your interviewing skills and your ability to be present and Tiff, your ability to be present is much better. I'm not blowing up your respective bums. It's just true. And so when I recognize growth and I, you know, what Melissa has that you don't have, you also have stuff that she doesn't have because she's a perfectionist to the point where, and she knows this, this is not throwing her under the bus. You know, you'll do an image and it looks 9 out of 10. Well, she'd fuck around for 3 more hours with that 9 out of 10 and she'd only take it to a 9.1. And I'm like, well, don't stop wasting your time. It looks really good. Oh no, the margin's this. And I think the font needs to, and I'm like, fucking hell, no one cares and no one's looking. Right.
Hey, when you just said then that you weren't blowing smoke up our asses, I had an involuntary slight elevation off my chair. So I think you were blowing smoke up my ass and I felt that wind go through there, Harv. So that was lovely. You know what I love about what you said about Tiff then is that when I first went out on my own in October the 1st, 2014, I did not run my first program until about late August 2015. Because it wasn't fucking quite right. And I think back to that and go, well, what's right? What would have been better than if I had have run it 2 months in? What do you reckon it is for, because, you know, I get inspired when I hear that, and I follow Tiff's stuff too, and like Tiff's just like fucking bullet of gates. He just goes and that's what I like. I like that because she puts herself out there. And like you said, sometimes I don't see it as average, but a lot of times it might be, yeah, that's okay. But then you go, fuck, that's brilliant, that one.
100%. But you got to be okay with fucking up and some things are not great. You go, well, that wasn't brilliant. Cool. Fucking welcome to the world's biggest club of people who produce shit that's not brilliant. It's like, that's everyone all the time. You know, we might end this podcast and go, fuck, that was a rock solid 4. What were we all doing? You know, but... And I know I get off some podcasts and I go, that was great. And others I go, oh, fuck, I wouldn't listen to that. And everything in between. And, like, I think that what stops people is essentially it's a lot of things, but it all comes under the banner of fear. Fear of failure, fear of looking stupid, fear of people not liking it, fear of not belonging, fear of it not working out over the long term. You have to be prepared to look silly and to fail and to fuck up and lose harder, easier said than done, but lose the ego and just go, yeah, look, that was shit. And okay, I'll do better. And it's all right. It's all right not being awesome, but you can't get awesome without first being average and just, you know, grinding every day. What were you going to say, Tiff?
There's also, like, one thing I've learned is, half of the time or a percentage of the time when I think it's shit, it's not shit. It's just my inner critic at work. And second to that, some of the stuff, it doesn't matter if I think it's shit, because if someone's out there resonating with a message that I'm putting out there to help people change or to share some knowledge, well, if they relate to it, doesn't matter what I think. I'm not the person that needs to benefit from it. So...
I reckon also, like, you know, you said before, I told you, Harps, when I first had you on the podcast, I was at heart rate 185 BPM and fucking shitting myself. And but then I think you've got to put yourself in that situation. And I guess I look at, I play a bit of golf and I like to try and play golf, and there's many of them that are much better than me because it sort of drags you along. And I want to encourage people who are listening that if you're going to get better, Don't fucking hang around with knuckle draggers who are no good and will drag you down. Start hanging around people, like reach out to someone like I did with you, Harps. I'm like, fuck, I wonder if you'll answer me.
Mm.
Like reach out to people who you want to talk to and just be brave enough to go, well, they might say no. I reached out to Mark Manson one time and he's like, well, you need to have like 350,000 listeners. And I'm like, well, I'm fucked straight away.
Yeah.
But the good thing was he actually responded really quickly via email, but why would I not reach out and give it a crack? And,
that's right. He's definitely not coming on if you don't send him an email.
No.
Like Tiff and Melissa send out hundreds of emails and probably 80 on, I don't know, Tiff, maybe 80% we don't even hear back from or...
Yeah.
And then what do we get? 5 to 10% of the ones that you send out?
Probably.
You know,
Melissa would probably know the numbers on that. I just do the thing.
We know you're
that's
not
called attention to detail, Tiff.
Yeah, that's the box that Melissa ticks.
Somebody sent me a message. I was just trying to find it on the phone, which is not great, not a great habit in the middle of a show, but and they essentially said, and they mean well, they said something I can't remember which platform it was on, but this morning about, oh, I hate it when you say you're mediocre because clearly you're not. You do all these things and, you know, you kind of something about my impact on other people like da-da-da. And what's funny is people think because you might do some really cool things, right? So I said to her, I didn't say that I haven't achieved a lot or I don't do some cool things or I don't create greater results sometimes. I said, I am not special, which I am not, and I am not outstanding or exceptional. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to know my history, you know, then I got picked last for every fucking sporting team. That's not exceptional. I was a fucking straight C student, not exceptional. I didn't even think about going to university at all until I was in my mid-30s. And it wasn't like I did fucking nuclear fusion or fucking I joined the space program, right? So, and I've done a lot of things that have failed and so on. But I think when we go, oh, well, that's because Craig Harper's special or exceptional, it kind of gives people a reason not to succeed. Mm-hmm. But when I go, well, no, I'm not. But what I do is when I start something, I generally finish it. And also I will get uncomfortable a lot. And also when I go, I'm going to work out every day, I'm actually going to do it. I'm not going to start 57 times in a year. I'm not going to give up. And when I go, I'm going to eat well, I will eat well, right? And it's like all of these things are optional. And I love encouraging people to, you know, acknowledge where they are. Okay, I'm not great at this, or I don't have great genetics, or I can't run faster, or I didn't ace school or whatever. Cool, that's all okay. But then the next question is, cool, what are you going to do though?
Yeah.
I wish I had a T-shirt that said, cool, comma, what are you going to do though? Because what you do, not your default setting ability or talent or not your fucking cheer squad or not what people think of you, not what people tell you you should do, but literally what you do creates the shape of your life. Because what you do determines your outcomes and your outcomes determine the practical reality you inhabit.
So Harps, and I know I mentioned this to you early days because I've heard that story from you many times. I'm not outstanding and I'm not brilliant and I'm not all of these things. Now, as you were talking, I'm like, this is my thought process, not yours, that this is Harps' Christmas Day moment, this bit. Like, you are very, very fucking good at what you do and you help lots of people, but you continually roll this story out of, I'm not special and I'm not, and you might believe that, but I just wonder why you go there, because sometimes I don't think you give yourself the credit, the kudos and celebrate what you do really well. So what the fuck's going on there, mate?
Okay. Thank you. That's a compliment. I appreciate it.
Don't you go with, but I'm not special, because I'll fucking come back at you again.
I honest hand on heart on my gorgeous mum's life. I'm not fishing when I say that. I genuinely believe it. In fact, if you knew sometimes how I feel about myself, you would be surprised.
Mm.
But what I do and the results I produce I might say, yeah, they're special results or they're great results, but am I exceptional in terms of my the core ingredients of what I have to work with? No, I'm not athletically gifted. I'm not creatively gifted. I'm not genetically gifted. I'm not intellectually gifted. I'm not. And, you know, that kind of bothers people. I go, no, but I fucking read a lot and I listen a lot and I study a lot and I do a lot and I work a lot.
And They're gifts, though. Tenacity is a gift.
No, it's not. It's a choice. It's a fucking choice. Anyone can be tenacious.
Mm.
You know, musical ability is a gift. Genetics are a gift. Tenacity is a fucking choice. And this is the thing. The only reason I do well is because I choose to do things that most people won't and I don't give up when most people would. That's the thing. But it's kind of gives people a get out of jail card when they go, oh, yeah, but you're brilliant. No, I'm not. I've got no more potential than you two, maybe less. And that's not me being self-deprecating or humble. If I was brilliant, fucking hell, I'd be telling everyone. I'd have a T-shirt with it. But, you know, and also, honestly, Mark, for me, being I do need to be careful that I'm not overly self-deprecating. So you do have a point because I can do that. But also me being aware of my mediocrity keeps me grounded. It keeps me grateful and humble.
I think that's really important, but I also think it's just as important with what you said before about the self-deprecation, because that, and it's not, you can say that and people can hear it, but they might be thinking this, fuck, what if I become really fucking good at something, but I still think I keep telling people that I'm not as fucking good as what other people might tell me I am. I think we lose something there. So I like to see you started to have a few little humble brags about things and I was like, fucking great.
See, there's a difference, right? If you said to me, am I good at podcasting? I'd say, well, the evidence tells me yes.
What's the evidence? Is that the numbers you're talking about?
Yeah, in terms of listeners, followers, connection, feedback, yeah.
So get outside the numbers.
But was I good at the start? No. Am I good at corporate speaking? Yes. Was I at the start? No. How did I get good? By first being shit.
You did do an amazing first talk at the age of about 23 to the guys in the timber yard, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I think people are missing out on a bit by not hearing you every now and again. And you said then about, look, the numbers will say it, and that's sort of the data and that, but I sort of think about, they talk about in adaptive below the neck stuff. So like, you know, the head, the heart and the gut type thing, in your heart and in your gut, are there any times where you're like, hey, I'm actually a pretty fucking decent, hardworking, good human being who's really helping other people to bust out of their shit that they're living
in? Yeah, that's a different thing. I think I am. I try to be. There's a lot about me over the years, not in a woe is me, feel sorry for me, self-loathing way, but there's a lot about me over the years that I've really worked to change because I didn't like how I was. I didn't like. Look, I do think I have a gift that was innate, and I think the gift that I have is communication.
Yep.
And I was always a good communicator, even as a child, probably almost – disconcertingly good for some grown-ups.
What part of communication though, Harps? What, you know, it can be clarity and timeliness and I guess the conviction and the message. Is there a particular part of communication that you're gifted at?
I think it's developed. This is a skill that's developed is finding, I think I'm pretty good at connecting with a lot of different people at once.
Yep.
Whereas I think if you listen to some people who are, say, for example, very academic, they're good at connecting with academics. And I think I'm not bad at breaking down complicated stuff and making it understandable and digestible. Like I can teach things that could be very convoluted and confusing and hard to grasp. I can teach those things in a way where nearly everyone understands and actually gets it in a pretty short amount of time quite often.
I'm going to shut the fuck up here, but I'm going to pick something else up then.
Mm.
I think I'm not bad.
Mm.
I didn't hear you say, I think I'm great at this. And this is one of the things I'd like to hear more from you is like using the old, I think it's the old soften the blow routine.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I don't give a fuck what you want to hear from me.
Well,
so
here we go. Fuck here off. We go. All right. And thank you very much for coming to this episode of the You Project and fuck off. What do you reckon? What's going on here, Tiff? What's happening with old mate over to my right at the moment?
Yeah, we've got some work to do. I think we've got some work to do.
Hey, steady on you. Hey, now, of course, Simply Practically Human is, for my listeners, Mark's podcast is Simply Practically Human. Hit him up, follow him, have a listen. And, of course, Tiff is Roll With The Punches. Thanks for climbing out of your man cave, mate, and having a chat with us and hosting me or me hosting you or Tiff hosting both of us. I don't know who the fuck is in charge today, but it's been fun nonetheless. And thank you, Tiff.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Harps. Cheers, mate. Thanks, Tiff.